Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view now through September 22, 2024. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. It's made possible in part by contributions from podcast listeners. Please consider making a contribution by going to the Donate Now tab at mpbonline.org. Thanks for your financial support.
Welcome to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio, where each week we talk with creative Mississippians. I'm your host, Maria Zerang, Folk and Traditional Arts Director at the Mississippi Arts Commission. And today I'm talking with fiber artist and educator Yolandi Van Heerden. Yolandi is a multifaceted artist based in Greenwood, Mississippi. Her work is full of color, storytelling, and very much steeped in community. This year, Yolandi was awarded a Folk Arts Fellowship from the Arts Commission, and I'm honored to have her on the show to talk about what's been going on since she was last a guest on the Arts Hour. Welcome to the show, Yolandi.
Thank you for having me back, Maria. I appreciate this.
Yeah. I was so excited to be able to talk to you again. And, when we were talking about this episode, we were talking about kind of picking up where your last episode left off, which was in 2019. And so a lot has happened since then. Of course, the pandemic happened since you were last a guest. So I thought we could start there. And I wanted to talk to you about Greenwood Strong, which is a project that you did to kind of rally support of the community in Greenwood. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. So Greenwood Strong, it sort of was born because when the pandemic hit and we all went into isolation, all my classes were stopped midweek. It was so sudden and so fast. And prior to that, I was so busy with classes daily with little kids that I, you know, not only did I need to find that connection with the community, but I was worried about the children. I felt that they needed to sort of do something as well. And at Art Place in the gallery, there's three giant windows, and I visualized these giant banners in front of them. And at times I would make sort of something meaningful and have the kids decorate it and stick it up in the window. So what happened was that the pandemic hit, and immediately I got some phone calls from people who wanted masks. So I went into massive mask making production and got all my ex-sewing kids involved with masks. And, you know, they would come by my studio and I would leave bags outside the studio, pre-cut masks with instructions, and everybody, you know, I don't want to go too much in the mask making, but that's sort of how it started. Because what happened was a few big companies in Greenwood ordered masks from me in humongous numbers. And one of them was Wade Incorporated. And the kids from the president of Wade was in my art classes. So when I delivered the masks, I noticed their giant windows. And I thought, wow, that's a perfect place for a big banner. And I'm sure he would allow me if I say to him, his kids will paint it. And so that was the first one. That's where it started. I used India ink with Bingo Daubers, and I drew out in my writing, "We are Greenwood Strong," and a tractor, and just some very, you know, I'm not an artist. I really can't draw, but I like to just doodle whatever my arm feels like drawing. So it looks very rudimentary and comical. And so it started there, and I took this huge banner, like the banners were probably like 7 to 8 feet long. And what I would do is I did like two or three of those. Wade was the first one, and I can't remember. I think Turn Row Books was another one, and one of the pharmacies, Greenwood Pharmacy, was another one. And under each one, I had like a comical drawing, you know. And I would ask the owners or the proprietors' kids, hey, would you ask your kids to paint this in? And I would drop off the banner with liquid watercolor paint and the brushes, and it became this whole production. And so after I had a few done, I put it on Facebook, and I asked the community who wants to make banners so that we could start to like have these all over town, just sort of something bright and colorful when people drive by. It's this, not only just this words of encouragement, but it's this sort of connection we start to build amongst ourselves in this time of isolation, which was, we didn't know how long the isolation was going to be. I personally thought it was going to be like 2 months, and then we would be back to normal. Anyway, and so that's how the Greenwood Strong campaign started. And blew up. It blew up. It was bananas. I think I made 200 banners in the end. And people started to just donate money to Art Place. So we decided, oh, that would be nice. If anyone wants a banner, make a donation, and it all goes into keeping the doors open as far as, you know, just paying for bills and electricity, etc. And we also made some t-shirts that people could buy, and those were hysterical because I had a design on the back that it was like a cross, and on the one side had a tractor, and the other side liquor bottles, the pharmacy with the pill bottles, and a plate of food, like the Lascaux's sort of fish on a plate. And it just sort of was an iconic idea of what Greenwood is. The people there like to eat and drink and party. And it was funny and tongue-in-cheek, you know. We don't take ourselves very seriously. And so it was a lovely, bright, colorful campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's so awesome that you did, like, close to 200 banners, and it just blew up. Did you imagine that it would have the response that it did?
Honestly, did not even think that far. It was more just an immediate art that was taking place in the moment. And literally, I was like an Uber driver going from house to house, dropping off banners with paint, picking up banners, taking them back to Art Place, dropping them off at the business. And I was so busy. It was like a taxi driver. And it was just, I wasn't thinking past the day. It was just this fun thing. And at the same time, you know, it was the pandemic. So I would sterilize the brushes because we weren't sure about germs. Leave them outside the front door. Don't touch anybody. And I don't see anybody. But yet, we all became connected through this fun thing, fun activity.
Yeah, no, I think it's such a cool project, and you actually wrote about it for the Arts Commission on Mississippi Folklife. So, yeah, you could check that out on our website. And there's pictures of the banners there and the shirts. You gave us pictures of the shirts. Are any of the banners still up now?
Yes, actually there are. Wow. I've noticed there's one up in Mel Harris's real estate company. It's still there, and there's a few around town. They're not colorful anymore because the sun bleached away all the paint, except India ink is permanent, so mm-hmm. You just see the black cartoon lines.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's probably like four or five that you can find around town.
Wow, that's cool.
I know, it's funny.
Yeah. Well, I guess kind of just keep on the pandemic. Did you find, like, as an artist, and, you know, you're also a teacher, you do a lot of workshops and stuff. Did the pandemic kind of impact how you did your work?
Yes, it did. When the pandemic hit, of course, all classes were shut down, and I did the masks, and then I moved into the Greenwood Strong, and then that ended, and I was sort of like, what now? And then I started to do, you know, we did a few classes on Facebook Live, but it was, you know, it was a little bit strange. I even did one at MPB where we recorded doing some activity. And so we slowly started to gather with masks on, and that was very strange because we were in this strange period. I remember, like, one of my little kids would hug me, and I froze because everyone has been telling you don't touch people, keep your masks on, it, and so that was awkward and strange and unnatural. But slowly but surely, we started to break back into teaching, keeping masks on very much so, and encouraging kids to wash their hands. I mean, I have never seen so much sanitizer since then everywhere. It's been I think we slowly moved back into making art. And once you sort of not focus so much on the pandemic, but back on the art, things soften and creativity flows, and you find your happiness again. I mean, that's kind of how I can think of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, with all the projects that you do and community work, I mean, it just seems like you responded in such a positive way to a really tough situation, you know?
Oh, and, you know, right before the pandemic hit, I was in the middle of a community quilt with Grenada, with Robin Whitfield's Shakshuma Swamp. Mm-hmm. And I did all the quilt blocks. I went down to Grenada a bunch of times to the elementary school, and the whole community became involved and made all these blocks, created the big quilt, actually four quilts. We met at the library, I think twice, gosh, the pandemic seems so long ago, but we met at the library, and right after that, we got shut down. So when the pandemic hit, I had to finish this quilt by myself. But in a way, I had the time because we weren't allowed to congregate.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you know, I kind of want to jump to another project that you did during the pandemic, but it kind of started before, was your local news reporting on Facebook, WYOL. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, so this is pure nonsense. WYOL stems from me living in Greenwood, Mississippi. My husband and I, we live right on the bank, on the other side of the levee of the Yazoo River. And the first time it started to rain, right, like during the winter, the river pushes over the banks and floods this trail in front of our house. The whole thing gets flooded. And I would slowly start to do these live news reports, and I would end off, I would always say, this is WYOL from Greenwood, Mississippi, because my name is Yolandi. And I would improvise for a microphone. I would use a stick because, it's complete and utter goofiness and fun. And I would start to make reports on the rise of the river and get chalk. And it's so bananas because I know the water is going to wash away the chalk, but that's part of the goofiness of the entire thing. Nothing makes sense. And I act like it's real technical. And so I would report on the river. Sometimes I would have put waders on and wade right deep into the close to where the boat ramp is and do these sometimes late at night reports. And it's just really fun. And then I remember my best friend Martha gave me for my birthday a sign for my car, a magnetic sign that said WYOL Action News. It's red, white, and black, and it looks extremely official.
Yeah.
And she also gave me a microphone, a Bluetooth microphone. But the thing on the car door is so funny. So Scott and I drove through, we went to visit a friend in Louisiana, and I had this on the side of my car because sometimes I would just leave it on for fun. And we drove right past a marathon, and the police saw us and waved us right through because we were the news crew.
Whoa.
And then on the way back, we drove through this small little town, and people stopped us right in the middle of the road and said, oh, the news is here. Come on. Come and see our theater. And so really funny things have happened since I created this absolute fake news station.
Yeah, and what has been the response, of like locals?
Locals enjoy it. They think it's funny. The other day, an older lady stopped me in Walmart, and she said, oh, you should go live here in Walmart. I love listening to you. And so, people follow you, and sometimes it freaks me out a little bit because I don't know who's out there in Facebook land. And, it's just strange. But at the same time, with like every ice storm we've had, not this last one, the one before, I had to go and take care of my sheep. I had two sheep back then. So I had to drive a long way to Teoc to go and look after them and feed them very, very slowly, like 10 miles an hour. And I would go live so people could see what's going on because nobody could even leave their houses. It was so slippery. And so I think, like, just again, it's a silly, goofy radio station, but what it does is it sort of connects us in a weird way.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, just in what we've been talking about at the beginning of the show, I mean, connection, community, those are huge themes in your work. I mean, do you see that as well?
I do. You know, it's so funny. The older you get, the more you sort of also see these resemblances. It's funny because I think the older I get, the more I become like my father. He was absolutely so deeply embedded in his community. And I'll do things and I'll think, oh my gosh, I am just like him. Like, totally love, like, goofing off and creating hijinks and, connecting with people and in the community in a very fun and goofy way.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great, and I know that, people love it. People love watching you on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Maria Zerang. You are listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour.
The Arts Hour is a co-production of the Mississippi Arts Commission and MPB Think Radio. You can also listen to the show on Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5. To have access to all Arts Hour interviews, subscribe to the podcast using your favorite podcasting app.
I'm Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law, host of In Legal Terms. If you're enjoying this podcast, I encourage you to listen to In Legal Terms, the show about you and your rights. We find interesting legal topics to bring to you and let you know how the law affects you. Find In Legal Terms on any podcasting platform on your smart device or on our website, inlegalterms.mpbonline.org.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
And we're back on the Mississippi Arts Hour. I'm Maria Zerang with the Mississippi Arts Commission, and I'm talking with quilter and fiber artist Yolandi Van Heerden on this week's episode. All right, so we just had our break, and before the break, we were talking about the pandemic. I just want to continue that conversation a little bit to talk about a project that started during the pandemic for you was these fabric placemats that you were working on. Can you kind of describe them and just kind of talk about the story behind them?
Okay. It was sort of like three quarters through the pandemic and people started to go on short vacations. And I had a trip booked to go and visit some friends in Los Angeles. And it was in August. And I remember I was really nervous about this. And I called my friends and my friend said, you know, everybody is wearing masks and nobody goes inside restaurants. We can't sit inside. And people were nervous about flying. And I just decided that I didn't want to go. It was freaking me out. I didn't feel good about it. I was on edge. And I decided to stay home, cancel my trip, and just go into my studio and sew and just be there. Best decision ever. The moment I made that decision and went into my studio, it's like this huge cloud just floated away from my shoulders. And I started to play with the fabric. And I have so much fabric and a sickening amount, nauseating amount. But not like lots of bolts, lots of tiny little pieces because I'm so cheap. I will never buy a lot, but I'd like to buy a lot of different ones, right? And because I'm so overly obsessed with colorful, bright patterns, a lot of very African and Japanese stuff. I don't know, those are my two favorite styles of fabric. And I remember I was just like starting to plan classes for things I could teach kids to sew. And at the same time, you know, the one thing we were all doing back then, which was so important, was people were spending time at home, sitting down and eating with a family. It was this communal gathering in this sort of isolated way that was happening, that was almost taking you back to old-fashioned times, if you will. So I was playing with this one pattern, making a placemat, and it's sort of like a Montessori style placemat. I grew up very traditional. I grew up in a household where every single morning for breakfast and every single night for dinner, I had to set the table. And we were, I would say, we were like middle to poor class. But my parents were very, very adamant about you had to put down a placemat, a knife, a fork, and a spoon, and a cloth napkin, and your water cup. So when I was a little kid, all little kids learn in South Africa how to eat with a knife and a fork. In America, people love to eat just with a fork, but we do sort of the English style. And I had like a little silver fork with a gnome on. They had gnomes on. I remember I had this gnome set, and it was just like, I loved dinner. As a little kid, I loved the whole ritual of dinner because you set it, you get your knife and fork, and because I had these special utensils. And then even as teenagers, I remember my brother and I had my special spoon and my special fork, and he was not allowed to use my special stuff. So I had to set the table and he had to clear the table. We had to have the knife, the fork, the spoon. So I made these placemats with fabric cut out for where all the utensils go, the plate and the napkin and the cup. And then I started to really play with colors and designs and from this plethora of fun fabric that I have. And I remember when I had this idea, I was in my studio that night till almost 2 a.m. I just could not stop working. I made one after the other, and I made a whole set of 10. And I thought, this is... I was playing around, but I thought, I don't want these because I want to make more. So what am I going to do with them? And I thought, let me just put them on Facebook and see if I can sell them, because I wasn't making any money teaching. You know, we were still in the pandemic. And at 2:30 in the morning, I put them up and someone bought them right away. At wow. That early in the morning. And it blew my mind. And I still say to the person, are you sure you want all 10? And he said, yes, I want all 10. And then suddenly, this was early in the morning, and people wrote to me and said, I want some. And before you know it, this whole placemat thing just snowballed into this fabulous way that I could make money for a few months. But at the same time, I think it was very timely, because that's what everyone was doing, going back and... You know, sort of like it was this like fun Montessori way to teach kids as well, how, you know, the art of setting the table. But also it's like it was like little objects of like mini, not quilts, but like mini sort of fun little fabric narratives on the table that you could just leave on your table even when you weren't eating, because they're just so fun, and lots of colorful pictures and iconic images. It could have anything. People started to ask me for special orders. They wanted animals, or they wanted this or whatever. So yeah, the placemats were a lot of fun, and thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah, they're really cool to look at too. And are you still making them or taking them?
I do. I have not been making that many lately. The whole last year, I did not sew very much for some reason. I had made a few quilts, but other than that, I was a little bit paralyzed in my sewing last year. But it's funny, like lately, I've gotten back into my studio again after so many months.
Yeah,
And it's kind of nice when that happens, though, because then new stuff are born.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm starting to, like, just brace yourself. In a few months, there'll be a bunch of stuff coming out.
Okay. Well, do you want to talk about any of those things coming out?
Well, I've been, you know, I get a lot of people ask me to make memory quilts.
Mm-hmm.
With loved ones' clothes, and I never charge people for this type of work. And I don't take on a lot of them because it takes so long to make one. I mean, I spend a lot of time figuring it out, because it has to be absolutely perfect, right? In this imperfect way that I like to sew. So the other day I was playing around with some ideas for animals, and so stuffed animals using like little memory bears or memory dogs or memory cats, stuffed little animals, and all the panels using different pieces of clothing. So that's something that I'm playing around with at the moment.
Wow, yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned... just a minute ago about this imperfect way that you like to sew. Can you talk a little bit more about that and kind of how that just kind of fuels your quilting style?
Okay. It's sort of probably, I wouldn't say I'm lazy, but I did not learn how to do sewing the proper traditional way. So I like to just improvise and forge my way through whatever I want to achieve, a very unorthodox way. And it's also a lot how I teach children. And I like that, because I feel like that kids respond to that as well, because it gives you a lot of freedom. And it also gives you the freedom in a way not to fail, because you just keep going. If it doesn't work this way, just keep going and make it work. And you develop new ways to do whatever you want to do. So with a lot of the quilts that I've made, some of them I'll hand quilt, especially the very big ones, because it's easier to manage such a giant piece of fabric. Also, because one specific time, someone asked me to make a a quilt out of, it was a quilt for a friend of theirs who had breast cancer, and they wanted to shower her with this quilt after she had a double mastectomy, young girl. And all her friends drew on fabric and sent me all the pieces, and I started to make this giant, giant quilt, and it was way too big to machine sew, so I hand quilted the whole thing. And it was fabulous. Then I made another memory quilt, and this one was equally as big. But what happened was most of the fabric on this quilt was, it was like they were t-shirt fabric and khaki fabric and stretchy polo shirt fabric and just so many different kinds of fabrics. And if you know anything about fabric, fabric has personality of its own, like everything likes to lay a different way, and they just kind of like move. So with that, what I did was I started to free motion. It was free motion is a technique I learned from Kathy Fussell, one of my mentors, but I sort of like free motion this almost as if the machine is a pencil and I'm just sketching, drawing back and forth, sketching on my actual fabric. And by doing that, the backside of the quilt will have a picture, as well as I'm making the quilt so strong that if the family wants to sleep with it and wash it over and over, it will not fall apart. It will handle the wear and tear. So that's kind of what I say when I say imperfect style of sewing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's also very improvisational as mm-hmm. well. And it seems like you're letting, you know, the project, the ideas, and the fabric kind of dictate which direction mm-hmm. you're going in. Is that right?
Yes, very much so. It's funny because, like, when I get the fabric, I will have a little bit of an idea of how I want to go. But oftentimes, once you start, it's sort of like when you plant something and it starts to grow, and the more you like give it water and food, it gets more beautiful. And sort of the same with this, these items that, you know, I create, I just kind of like let it go and like give it the food and see where it leads me. And oftentimes it's better than what I had planned. And now, and there's been a few times where I've made something and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And but I would just like put it aside and wait until the time is right, until I figure out, okay, wait, I want to cut it up and throw it, part of it in that thing. Or so, yeah. But in general, I kind of just like to like, yeah, do it and see what where it leads me.
Wow.
Kind of like free range.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really fascinating approach to quilting. Yeah, it's awesome.
I think life should be like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Just kind of, yeah, free flowing.
Uh-huh. Hi, I'm Maria Zerang. You are listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The Arts Hour is a co-production of the Mississippi Arts Commission and MPB Think Radio. You can also listen to the show on Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5. To have access to all Arts Hour interviews, subscribe to the podcast using your favorite podcasting app.
Join us each week for Everyday Tech on MPB Think Radio. We have an IT expert, a computer repair ace, and we troubleshoot your problems on the phones as well. Everyday Tech, Wednesdays at 10 on MPB Think Radio. Download the podcast now or listen on YouTube on the MPB Think Radio channel.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour and MPB Think Radio. I'm Maria Zerang with the Mississippi Arts Commission. I'm talking with quilter and fiber artist Yolandi Van Heerden today. All right, so we're back for another segment. And I kind of want to start off this segment talking about the Folk Arts Fellowship, because you are one of our current participants in the grant program. And so I just kind of want to know how the fellowship has impacted you in some way.
Well, first, I have to say thank you very much that you bestowed this wonderful fellowship on me. I'm so appreciative, and it's such an honor. It really is. You know, it was the craziest thing. Last year was such a tough year for me as an artist and as a human being. So I got this wonderful fellowship, but then I felt paralyzed last year with my creativity. Yeah. It's the strangest thing. There was just a series of events that happened, and they literally hit me like a punch in the forehead from the beginning of the year, because I'm a visual person, so I keep a photo diary.
Yeah.
And I looked back at my photos, and I could tell when it happened. It started on January 3rd. It was just bananas. Without going into too much detail at all, but what happened was it made me feel really disconnected and alone, and it's sort of the same thing as writer's block. I would walk into my studio and I just could not do a thing. I would see all this fabric, but at this, it was like my arms were really heavy. So what I decided to form a little art group that would meet at my house once a month. And I wrote to all my friends who are artists and I said, hey, I really need to us to get together again and get this collective consciousness going so we can all build on each other's creativity and just talk and be together, because it's so important to keep that going. And I started, we started in February. Some of my friends that joined us are Robin Whitfield, Hart Henson, Pat Brown. We have had Gerald DeLoach, Church Going Mule. I have friends in Greenwood, Shelby Gorman. She's a graphic artist, super fun. Elizabeth Hinckley and Dan Splangard, who with Hush Puppy Music Up, and just like some fun people. I don't want to say everyone's name, because if I leave someone out, then my friends will be like, "Why did you not say my name?" But anyway, but it was wonderful. We got together that very first time, and the idea behind it is, we meet from 6 to 8. It's not a long commitment. We get together. Everybody brings some drinks and food, snacks. It can be anything. Robin always shows up with gas station food from Holcomb, which is awesome. And then I bring some fun art activity to the table in the same kind of way that I do art with little kids. Really fun stuff. Playful stuff. Nothing serious. Because here I am with these artists that I consider incredible, and they're all fantastic painters or whatever they do, and I can't even draw a stick figure. So it's not about how good you are. It's more about, let's just sit down, talk, and play and connect. And so that's what started. And so the first night we met, Robin, and I think it was Robin who told me, there's this thing she would do with kids. You fold a piece of paper 5 times, and then the first person draws the head, and then the second person draws part of the body, and you go so on, so on, so on, till at the end you reveal it and see what comes out. And I thought she said Squizzits. I thought, that's great. That's the name of our club, Squizzits. So I found out afterwards it's called Exquisite Corpse. Yeah. And but now everybody, we all just call it the Squizzits. Anyway, so the Squizzits were born, and we've been going strong. We've had our first anniversary this past February, which was awesome. And we've never missed a session, and we've made really incredible art, really fun stuff. We've done shibori, not this last time, the time before that, everybody made mini quilts.
Wow.
And a mini quilt is the size of a coaster, and you just completely sew everything by hand. It's just fun, and you can sew it whichever way you want. There are no rules. And so it makes it, it's very forgiving and joyful.
Well, you know, you were talking a little bit about how this club came at a time when you had a little bit of a block. Do you feel like you've kind of overcome that in a way through this club?
I think that's a good question. Yes. About halfway through this club, I think Shelby or Robin or somebody mentioned the book, Rick Rubin's book that came, that he wrote, called The Creative Act, A Way of Being. And I right away ordered the book. And it's absolutely wonderful. This book is so fantastic. It's my creative Bible. Yeah. And Robin and I both have read the whole thing front to back. But I think it was September, maybe, the September meeting we had. Robin came to our club, and she said she had just read this section in the book It's called The Art Habit, and she said it's very, and she just wanted to read us a chapter. And what this chapter is about is that as an artist, you should not put that burden on yourself to make money with your art, because the moment you do that, it can cut into your creative output and your creative psyche. And I feel like that's what happened to me. So in this chapter, he writes that you should give yourself that allowance. If you want to do a job where you answer phones, and that job is going to allow you to pay your bills, which will release yourself from any financial burden and allows you to be creative, that's okay. And you should do that. You should not put any stress on your creative side. And that's what I did. And you know what? The crazy thing is, the next day, she had just read it. It's bananas how this happened. The next day, I got a call from Boys and Girls Clubs, and I was offered the job as the art director for the Mississippi Delta. And it was wonderful because I felt it was so timely and so perfect, and I accepted the position, and it sort of like freed me up to just go back to my studio with new eyes and, you know, renewed vigor.
Wow, what a serendipitous moment.
Yes.
Wow, I mean, it's kind of out of a story that the stars aligned perfectly for you to have this job. But, you know, this job, you're also still so much, you know, doing art and kind of sharing that with young people. You're like, yes, this is kind of the direction that I want to go in. And then you get that job.
It was like magic.
Yeah.
It was absolutely wonderful. It was like, wow.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, do you want to talk a little bit about your work that you're doing with the Boys and Girls Club?
It's wonderful. It's kind of doing what I did at Art Place, but on steroids. I impact a lot of kids from ages 6 to 18, and it's very different in the sense where at Art Place, I was much more I would only do art this afternoon, maybe a Monday afternoon, and I would do sewing on Wednesday or whatever. But with Boys and Girls Club, it's 5 days a week, and we have so many clubs, and I can really spread a really wonderful art curriculum across 8 different clubs, from all the way from Jonestown, Clarksdale, down to Grenada, Greenwood, Itabina.
Wow, so you're all over the Delta.
Yes. We have clubs all over the Delta and a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so satisfying and wonderful to, like, you know, to expose these kids to a wide variety of art. And as you know, I really like to bring a lot of fabric into my art that I do with kids. So if I have a lot of extra fabric, I like to cut it in strips and teach weaving to the kids, because, you know, it's just a colorful, and there's something tactile that happens mm-hmm. when you work with a lot of physical stuff like that, not just drawing, but and especially because I'm not a trained artist, I approach teaching art to kids the same way I do my sewing. You know, I sort of think of what brings me joy and take that and bring that to the kids. And if you like to do it and if it brings you joy, that is going to pass on to the children.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like just from hearing you talk about your work, this job is kind of an extension of your work. And
yes.
Seems like it fits very well with your process, you know,
yes,
as an artist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. Well, you know, I want to jump in and talk a little bit about something exciting that happened to you, I guess, last year, being featured in Quilt Folk magazine. Tell our listeners about the magazine and about your feature.
I also want to say thanks to Coulter Fussell, because they found out about my work through her. So that was a really nice recommendation she did. Quilt Folk came to Greenwood and they visited me in my studio, and I showed them all the stuff I do there. And then I also introduced them to all the sewing I did at Art Place, with teaching sewing to tweens and teens, mostly the quilting that we've done, because I heavily focused on doing quilting with children. And I was just so happy to have these kids showcased, because anyone who makes a quilt knows it's hard work.
Yeah.
The building the top of a quilt is the fun part and the easy part. But when you actually make the whole quilt, that's a lot of work, and it's cumbersome and it's not easy. And when I have 6 and 7 and 8 year olds sitting behind a machine and wrangling that quilt through the machine, I was so glad to have them be featured in this magazine because it's an achievement. Yeah. And as proud as I am of them, I wanted them to be proud of themselves. So this was a good way for them to feel good about what they do, because this is a wonderful, this was a real, it's a beautiful magazine. Yeah. And quite an honor.
Yeah, every new issue, they feature another state. So they take a deep dive into the quilting community in that state. And so I think it was one or two issues ago, maybe one issue ago, they did Mississippi. I think their current one is New Jersey, I think.
Yeah, New Jersey. I think 2 issues ago, because it was Mississippi, and then maybe Colorado.
I don't know. They take a deep dive in quilting of each state, and a lot of fabulous quilters in there all over Mississippi, you know, so check it out. Yeah. Well, also wanted to ask if there's any other projects that you'd like to briefly talk about before we end the show.
I just want to mention this, the Kohler Foundation is helping the city of Kosciuszko build the L.V. Hall Art Center, and they invited me to go and do an art activity there. And it was such a refreshing, beautiful event, and made a very deep impact on me. I did some fun painting on wood scraps and sort of like an L.V. Hall style. But what I really appreciated of that day, too, was the passion and the love that the people who are putting it together, you know, that they have for L.V. Hall and for this project. And I had a, they gave me a private tour of L.V. Hall's house, which is right there on the grounds. And it was so, I got goosebumps. I mean, I got teary-eyed when I walked in, because I could feel her spirit. You could see it on the walls. Everything was, it just told me like an artist resides here and resided here. It was just beautiful and wonderful and a very special. And I love the city of Kosciuszko also, because they have a little, they have 2 antique malls there. And in the one, there's a lady. I don't want to give it away because I want to go back. But she sells old quilts. And I found a few beautiful quilts there. So it was a fun day. It was really lovely to be included in that project.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting what they're doing, and I can't wait to see kind of how it unfolds and just becomes a wonderful community center. Okay, well, anything else that you'd like to talk about?
I'm in the process of teaching the Boys and Girls Clubs sewing. I've set up a sewing workshop in the Greenwood Club and to start with, and it's so enjoyable to like teach the boys and the girls to sew. I have not had as many boys sewing as I have it, you know, as now. So that is always a lot of fun. When you see these kids who love to play with a football outside, get them behind the machines and, you know, see the joy on their faces.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Well, Yolandi, it's been such a pleasure. I had a great time talking to you today. And, it's just been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun. I loved it.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Well, thank you for listening. And remember to tune in each week for the Mississippi Arts Hour, a co-production of MPB Think Radio and the Mississippi Arts Commission.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.
Hello, I'm Dr. Nancy Lottridge Anderson, president of New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advising firm and co-host of Money Talks. For over 10 years, Money Talks has been answering your personal financial questions and sharing knowledge about money management. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.